This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachel. North Carolina's two gerrymandering cases have been in the news a lot over the past couple of months. In June, the U.S. Supreme Court affirmed a lower court ruling that state legislative districts are unconstitutional because of racial gerrymandering. The lower courts have not yet approved the redrawn maps. Last month, a three-judge panel in federal court determined that North Carolina's congressional maps are unconstitutional. That's because of partisan gerrymandering. The ruling said Republicans had 2 weeks to redraw the maps, but the U.S. Supreme Court issued a stay on that redraw. Tom Ross has done a lot of work on gerrymandering. He's the president of the Volcker Alliance and former president of the University of North Carolina System. Also a Terry Sanford Distinguished Fellow in Public Policy at Duke. Tom Ross, welcome back.
Thank you so much. I'm glad to be with you.
Tell us, I feel the need to do this because it's a complicated picture here in North Carolina, to review the status of North Carolina's two gerrymandering cases in the courts right now. Would you do that for us, Tom?
Sure, happy to. And actually, there are more than two cases. But, you know, litigation started shortly after the districts were drawn in 2011. In the case of the congressional maps, they were first declared unconstitutional based on racial gerrymandering. The legislature drew new maps, and those were approved by the federal court. Shortly thereafter, a lawsuit was filed attacking the congressional maps based on partisan gerrymandering. It's that case that you referred to just a moment ago, where the three-judge panel ruled really for the first time that a congressional map should be found unconstitutional based on partisan gerrymandering. That case is now, as you mentioned, been stayed by the Supreme Court. It will be appealed. It has been appealed to the United States Supreme Court. They have two cases up there already, one from Wisconsin, one from Maryland, both addressing the question of partisan gerrymandering. Some people think that the North Carolina case will be expedited and joined with those others. Others think it will just be stayed until the decision from the Supreme Court on those cases. With regard to legislative gerrymandering, as you mentioned, they were declared unconstitutional based on racial gerrymandering, and the court ordered new maps. The legislature drew new maps. At that point, the court was not favorably inclined to those maps, and the plaintiffs objected. So the court appointed a special master. A special master then redrew some of the districts to comply with the judge's ruling. There was objection to the special master's maps, but the court recently approved those maps and ordered the election to go forward under those maps. That decision, there is a pending motion to stay that in the Supreme Court, and also, I'm sure, an appeal to the Supreme Court in that case. Those are the two major cases going on right now, and they're going to be at the Supreme Court. We redistrict every 10 years, so we do it based on the census. These are all litigations going on since the 2010 census.
And we got one coming up in 2 years.
We got another one coming up in 2020. Right. The question is whether we'll ever get constitutional districts before the next decade.
Well, that is the question, but the fact that, I mean, in all of what you just said, suggests a great deal more attention now to this question that everybody feels one way or another needs to be fixed. And in a sense, there feels like there's more urgency, particularly with the U.S. Supreme Court taking on the difficult question of partisan gerrymandering, which has been with us for a couple of centuries. So tell us what your work is like, what you're doing at Beyond Gerrymandering, that project. What's it about?
Sure. So we it's really a public education effort and a policymaker's effort to help people better understand gerrymandering and why, in my view, it's a threat to democracy. So we've done several things, I think, that have been interesting. Probably the one that has gotten the most publicity is we did a simulation of what it would be like to draw congressional districts with an independent commission using nonpartisan criteria. We had a group of 10 retired judges that were asked to draw districts, and they did, and produced a map and did it without any consideration of partisan registration or voting history. And those maps were then compared with the legislative maps, and that's where Jonathan Mattingly's work comes in, because it actually has turned out to be not only very helpful in our educational efforts, but actually was the key to the three-judge panel decision finding the maps unconstitutional. So The question before the Supreme Court is really a unique one, and that is partisan gerrymandering simply a political question, which is what they've said in the past, or can it be so extreme that it violates the Constitution? And the courts have sort of been searching for an objective measure, and that, again, is where I think Jonathan's work is really quite important and really groundbreaking.
You mentioned Jonathan Mattingly. He is chair of the math department at Duke University, and he created a tool to detect partisan gerrymandering, and he joins us now. Jonathan Mattingly, welcome. Good to have you here.
Glad to be here.
So tell us more about this. I mean, so how did you first become interested in gerrymandering, and what's the connection with mathematics?
Well, it started from a very simple question. I had heard a lecture on the 2012 elections, where the majority of North Carolinians voted for the Democratic representative in the House of Representatives, and yet there were only four out of 13 elected Democrats. And a lot of people thought this was unfair because somehow it went against what they expected. But we kind of were left asking, you know, given the shape of the state and where everyone lives and the geopolitical makeup, what should we have expected? And that's a nonpartisan question. We just wanted to give some idea of, could we, you know, things are unconstitutional because they somehow go against what should have been there. But to answer that question, you have to have some idea what should have been there.
So what about this? I mean, this question, we've heard it a couple of times. I mean, again, we saw in our last gubernatorial race in the state of North Carolina, when North Carolinians vote statewide without district lines, they tend to vote Democrat. They certainly did in that election. And it was an important turning point in the sense that here's a state that took where the Republican presidential candidate took the state, and yet voters split the ticket. It would suggest something to you. Is that enough of a suggestion to you that things are awry, that something is wrong with the districts when more Democrats vote, or more people vote for Democrats than for Republicans? But we have this disparate, I think, 3-9 split in the congressional representation.
Right. So in 2016, it was 3-9. In 2012, it was 4-8.
You're the math guy.
Right. No, I don't add very well. But in any case,
it's 10-3.
10-3. Yeah, 10-3 and 4-9. Thank you, Tom.
Yeah.
So I think really, you know, that's not enough. It's not that simplistic. You really have to delve into the structure of the state, and that's what we tried to probe. So the basic, really simplistic idea we had was, let's create a whole collection of maps. You know, 24,000 maps that uphold certain nonpartisan design criteria for what a good map should look like. They were, in fact, taken from a proposed bill, a bill that's been proposed many times in the state legislature, and then say, well, if you use the same votes, take the 2012 congressional elections, and look at them over and over again with these collection of maps and see what the outcomes will be in each map, and then tally those outcomes and tally the structure of the outcome, was the map that we had a statistical outlier? Was it something unusual? Did it seem to imply that someone had their thumb on the scale?
So, and you did that, and it's interesting because, Tom, you talked about the map that you and the judges, a bipartisan panel of judges, came up with without consideration of partisan outcomes, right? And you compared that, Tom, to their map to a map that would have been done by a different criteria. Tell us about the outcome, because it's fairly interesting. It's obviously, to the eye, different, but the outcomes politically were not so different.
Right. So if you look at the 2012 map, and then you compare that with the map we used in 2016, and then you compare that to the map that the Beyond Gerrymandering panel of judges created, the 2016 and the 2012 map, to the eye, look very similar. And the 2012 map, 2016 map, and the judges' map look very similar to the eye. But in fact, if you look at the political outcomes, the 2012 map and the 2016 map are similar. And it's the judge's map that actually acts as one would expect, where the 2016 map, even though it looks like the judge's map, acts just like the unusual, scriggly map from 2012 that everyone knows from posters and T-shirts.
So that bipartisan objective map would have been considered an outlier. Is that what you're saying?
Well, the bipartisan map, no, was typical. Yeah, it was the two maps from the state legislature that were considered outliers. Okay. And I should say that it's important to remember that the judge's map was not something that had no politics inserted. These were half Democrats, half Republicans. And so they were arguing about, you know, where people live, so they were informed by that.
So, Tom, how does that work? You say, I mean, clearly nobody can filter out their political leanings that well. How did your process work to come up with that map? What were your rules? What were the rules that governed the drawing of those maps?
Right. We took the rules basically from legislation that had been introduced by a number of Republicans this in the previous legislative session, and in fact has been introduced many, many times over the years by both parties, which is a piece of legislation calling for nonpartisan redistricting using a set of criteria that prohibits the use of voter registration information and prior voting history information. So what you're left with is the ability to draw districts based on population, which was required by the Constitution, or certainly under the interpretation of the Constitution in Baker versus Carb, to end up with as close a proportionality in districts as you can. You try to get compact districts. But we drew these districts without regard to any partisan information. And I think that's really the key. It's less about who draws them than it is what the rules are. You know, to me, if you had nonpartisan criteria and transparency, you would end up with I think, much more competitive and much fairer districts that allow voters' voices to be heard. And that's really the key here to democracy. And it's why this is so important is in gerrymandered districts, so many voters feel like they don't have a voice any longer and that their vote really doesn't count because the decision on who their representative is determined in a primary. Whereas in districts that aren't gerrymandered, everybody's vote has a weight, and oftentimes the districts are more competitive. The map that our judges drew, for example, if you looked at the 2016 outcomes, 53% of North Carolinians voted for a Republican candidate, 47% voted for a Democratic candidate for Congress in 2016. And if you apply those percentages to the 13 congressional seats that North Carolina has, you would expect a 7-6 outcome. And if you look at the projected results using voter history, which we looked at after the judges had drawn their map, if you look at that those maps, what you see is that four of the districts would lean Republican. Three of the districts would lean Democrat, and the remainder would be toss-ups. And all of the districts would be much closer. So I think that's the kind of outcome you would get with nonpartisan redistricts and redistricting. Jonathan's work, which I think is so important, is, you know, he basically used that same criteria, produced thousands of maps, and then compared those thousands of maps to each other and to the judge's map and to the legislative maps. And all of the ones he drew under that nonpartisan criteria and the judge's map were all fairly close to each other on a scale, whereas the others were real outliers. And when you graph that and hold up a picture of it, it's pretty compelling.
So tell us more about that, Tom, Jonathan, and how that would work practically. If we were to say, let's hire Jonathan to do that and use all these maps to determine our final maps, what would that process look like?
Well, I mean, first of all, I think that's a question for the legislature and the courts. Right. But I mean, one way it might look is that there was a commission a la Beyond Gerrymandering the Judges kind of commission, which would produce a map, but then we would situate that map in a collection of ensemble of other maps that we had produced and say, does this one look typical? So we don't want to completely remove the politics from it. I mean, the judges know who lives where and what's going on. They just don't know exactly on which block everyone lives, and I think that's the problem.
Let me stop you right there, because it is precisely the precision that we can now employ using digital technology that even the Supreme Court, at least one of the justices, made note of in wanting to take this case and move forward and finally adjudicate.
Yes.
So talk more about what's the difference now, because it's been over 200 years we've been doing this, right? But it seems to me that precision is what's bringing this to public attention.
Right. I mean, one way to answer that question is we took the legislative maps, and we said, let's change only 10% of the precincts. Let's switch 10% of precincts from this congressional district to that one on the edges. And you might think that wouldn't really cause much of a difference, but the maps the legislature produced were so finely tuned that actually made a significant difference. Just changing 10% on the edges led to maps that were much less gerrymandered.
So, Tom,
part of the difference is, if I might, is you know, in the old days when we didn't have computers, we couldn't be as precise. We also were generally restricted to trying to not break county lines or certainly not break precinct lines. Well, now with computers, you can go down to what's called a voting tabulation district, which is just a very small area, and almost pick out in fact, you can pick out particular households and move people from one district to another. And it is that kind of precision, I think, that has allowed for gerrymandering to get to a level where it is really a science now and really can intentionally exclude opportunity for the party that's not in control. The other thing I think it's really important to remember is we shouldn't sit here today and blame only Republicans. They happen to be in power now in North Carolina, but look, this is I think today's Groundhog Day. So this is like Groundhog Day. It happens all the time, every 10 years. It happened when Democrats were in control. Of the cases before the Supreme Court, one's Democrat, one Republican in gerrymandering. So this is both parties doing this, and what we've got to do for the voters is fix it, and it's important to do for democracy.
I'll reinforce Tom's opinions in the same order, in the reverse order. So some preliminary analysis we did actually seems to imply that Maryland is actually gerrymandered for the Democrats. So both right. sides have been doing it. And on the other end, we shouldn't pretend that, so we're creating a bunch of maps to compare and to try to decide what's an outlier, but it's also being done by the people who are creating maps with technology. They can create many, many maps rapidly and check all these different maps rapidly. And so then they pick the one that's best for them. So we should be doing the same thing, ask which map best, lets the people's votes, let the voice encoded in those votes be best heard.
And it's not just a simple matter, because if I were to just think about it for half a second and say, well, here's how I'd fix it, I would want some very, very regular geometric patterns that included a normal, similar numbers of people, and just place that grid across the state and walk away from it and say that's fair. But Jonathan, and I think, Tom, I'll talk to you in a second. You both recognize that maybe that's not exactly fair in a democratic system, given regional differences.
Right. I mean, if we want to have regional representation, then we need to take into account different population densities. We need to take into account all those things. And as I said at the beginning, if you look at the 2016 maps and the judges' maps, they look actually quite regular, relatively speaking, and they look quite similar. But in fact, the 2016 map has this lack of competitive districts that Tom talked about.
Tom Ross, are we at a point where members of both parties, significant numbers, are taking this seriously enough that we might see some change?
I hope so. We have now recently created a new organization in North Carolina called North Carolinians for Redistricting Reform. It's a bipartisan group with prominent Republicans and prominent Democrats as part of the organization. It's our goal to encourage the legislature and the public to demand a constitutional amendment be placed on the ballot that would require a nonpartisan redistricting process. And I think that's what we need to do. We need to have protection for both parties that if you lose control, the other party's not going to go back to doing it the old way. And if we put it in the Constitution, I think we can protect the parties from each other. But more importantly, we can protect the voters from the parties and to give the voters an opportunity to have their vote count. So it is possible to fix this and make it much better. I think it is. There is a movement growing. It is a bipartisan movement, which I think is critical. Neither party really trust each other on this question. So it needs to be a bipartisan fix.
Jonathan Mattingly, are you finding that your business is up? Are people calling you from all other states?
Well, actually, we did do an analysis that weighed in on an amicus brief to the Supreme Court in the Wisconsin case mm-hmm. that Eric Lander wrote, and actually Justice Kagan picked up on in oral arguments. So, and we've also done an analysis in Pennsylvania. So, yes, business
Good.
Is up.
Jonathan Mattingly, chair of the math department at Duke University, created a tool to determine and detect partisan gerrymandering. Thank you so much for being on the program.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Tom Ross, president of the Volcker Alliance, former president of the UNC system, and a Terry Sanford Distinguished Fellow in Public Policy at Duke. Tom, thanks so much.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
You can find out more and you can take a look at those maps at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, the music of the Misty Mayhem Trio. Stay with us.